Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the summer movie wrap-up of 2023, courtesy of the good reviewers and critics of Hawaii Film Critics Society. So glad that everybody could be here for this video and audio podcast. We do this every season at the beginning of summer, normally at the ending of summer, and normally during the end of the fall. And so we got a lot to talk about today. So please stay tuned. We're going to talk about what was the best of, possibly what we thought didn't do well at the box office this season, and kind of measure up what the box office in 2023 was like, and how the film stacked up against past seasons possibly. So ladies and gentlemen, first off, want to introduce the founder of the Hawaii Film Critics Society, my hetero life mate, my brother from another mother. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Professor Barry Wurst. How are you, Professor Barry?
Doing okay, thank you. Good to see you, buddy.
Okay. Is hetero life mate still appropriate? Is that fine?
I think it's outdated. I think you're on your way to being canceled, but yes, it's time for now.
Fair enough. Also joining us all the way from the lovely island of Oahu, from Hawaii News Now, a man who is a veteran and could definitely run circles around me, a man who's been a movie critic for quite some time, a legend in our book. Ladies and gentlemen, Terry Hunter is on the podcast today as well. Mr. Terry Hunter, his expertise is he brings credibility to us. Trust me on that. Nice to see you, Terry. And of course, certainly last but not least, he is it's been a while since he's been on the show. I also wanted to say he's our newest inductee into the Hawaii Film Critics Society. His credentials are like limitless. He has got enough credentials. This man is a steward of film, and we're glad to have him aboard at the Hawaii Film Critics Society. Ladies and gentlemen, please a warm round of applause for Jaron, who is in the house today as well. Jaron, nice to see you as well, sir. Of course, you can check out Jaron. Let me go around really quick. Jaron, of course, you can check out his reviews, which are up on YouTube, correct? Where can we find those, Jaron? Just to let everybody know.
Jaron's movie reviews. I think I have that link up somewhere, but you know, if you find another Jaron doing movie reviews, I'd be astonished.
Yeah, so do I copyright strike him? Is that what I have to do?
No, I don't know. We'll have to play around with that. I gotta work on the algorithm.
Hey, Jaron, can you do me a favor? It sounds like you have your ear pods in, or you do have your ear pods in.
Yes.
I'm getting a little static. Can I see what you sound like without them?
Without them?
Okay. Yes, if it's possible. And while you do that, I want us, of course, you can check out Hawaii News Now. Mr. Terry Hunter, where can we find you, sir?
Well, I always tell people just Google Terry's Take Hawaii News Now, and they'll find me. I also tell people, if you go to YouTube and put Terry Hunter reviews and then the title of a movie you're curious about, I repost all my film reviews there.
All right. Well, listen, I cannot be held responsible if your credibility is put into question because of this show and myself. But you've taken your life into your own hands. I kid. And last but not least, of course, what's that, Barry? What's that, Terry? I'm sorry.
Terry, welcome to Wayne's World. All right, this is what we're talking about.
You know, I consider myself a big fan of film rather than a film critic. I have nowhere near the extensive knowledge that Barry has about movies. I don't. I just don't. But I love movies, and I go to movies that I think I'm going to like, and I really hope that I'll be able to recommend them to other people, and I hate to give pans. I really want to support filmmakers.
But absolutely.
Really, I'm not, you know, I did go to film school and learn how to make films, so I know how hard it is to make anything, and I have a great sympathy and admiration for filmmakers, because I couldn't make it as a filmmaker.
fair enough. On the exact opposite end of the spectrum, the very snooty film critic, Professor Barry Worst. of course, you can check out all his reviews, and including Terry's and Jaren's, at Hawaii Film Critic, or that highfilmcriticsociety.org. That's highfilmcriticsociety.org. Professor Barry has been lately doing his darndest to keep that up to date, because there was an issue beforehand dealing with some bugs in the system, as it were. But I think a lot of those have been worked out, and Professor Barry is doing his best. So if you want to see any of our reviews at highfilmcritics.org. Is that right, Barry? That hasn't changed, has it?
It's highfilmcriticsociety.org. Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. So, Professor Barry, this is the Hawaii Film Critics Society Summer Movie Wrap-Up of 2023. You're here, Jaren's here, Terry's here, and there I forget myself, G-Money, Greg, that's what they call me. Either one is good. I don't care which one. You can call me whatever you like. But we also are missing one.
Who's Maui, Greg. Let me blow some smoke.
All right.
Everybody, all right, you go to restaurants, people hear you talking, like, I've been listening to G-Money.
Well, if I must.
It's happened, man.
One of our other astounding film critics, Aaron may be joining us as well. He is that man has thumbs of their thumbs like the Flash, because that guy can write anything on his phone, and it's incredible. The stuff that he puts out is incredible. So our good friend, critic Aaron, may be joining us as well later on in the show. Now, gentlemen, I put this out to all of you. Anyone who wants to answer first, you're more than welcome to. 2023. Is I would say probably the second summer that we've dare I say that we've been particularly out of COVID, right? And so now we can say that this would be considered I would say that this is probably our first normal summer. What have you guys thought of the summer film season this year? How did 2023 shape up in your minds as those films were coming out? What were the things that you noticed? What were the things that were unexpected so far? What were the things in 2023's summer movie season that may have surprised you, or you weren't expecting, or whatever? So, Professor Barry, why don't I go to you first?
It was a bizarre season because, I mean, on the one hand, I think we all knew that The Flash wasn't going to be great, but to see how that film was so quickly dismissed, because there have been worse DC movies, for example. I thought Green Lantern was much worse, but Green Lantern actually did much better. I was really surprised that some of these movies that came with such hype, despite the fact that they were summer films and despite the fact that there were these attractions that have been just, you know, the hype had been building for months, whether it was Transformers or Indiana Jones, a lot of them just sank quite quickly. And on the other hand, you had something like Barbie and Oppenheimer, which are still going so strong. It's insane. You never would have imagined, looking at this season from the outset, what was going to connect and not connect. So I was kind of delighted, because there were certain films, like, for example, Mission Impossible, and we'll get into that, Mission Impossible and Spider-Man, that I thought were just fantastic. But you never knew what was going to connect and not connect with an audience. Even Insidious did fairly well this season. If anything, I was very taken aback by just how you could not predict it like a horse race. Some summers you can, this one you absolutely couldn't.
For sure. Jaren, did you have the same feeling as well?
I sure did, especially with Oppenheimer and Barbie, like, stealing box office records. I thought that was just incredible. And then there was something as small as a horror film like Talk to Me that suddenly had a lot of people talking. My theater was packed on the night of, and I was just, wow, I was kind of blown away by it.
What's interesting about Talk to Me is that it's already a hit, and they're already going to make a sequel. That's something. So to hear that, I have not. That's one summer film that I have missed. I really wanted to see it because I thought the trailers were, the second trailer I saw was better than the first one, and that really got me interested. So I unfortunately missed it. Now, Terry, you have seen some summer spectaculars. What do you think of 2023?
Well, one of the things it surprised me, as it did everyone else, that like at a movie like Oppenheimer was even released in the summer. I mean, it's a clear Oscar contending type of movie, and those usually don't come out until the fall. So I was really surprised about that. And Barbie's success is, you know, kind of wonderful. I mean, the fact that it pleases everybody, people who love Barbie dolls, people who hate them and what they represented. It's phenomenal. I'm just delighted for both of them. And of course, I have the benefit of living over here near Honolulu, where I can see films that don't get shown on Maui. And I was surprised at how many serious character-driven dramas were released this summer. For example, Past Lives. I don't know if that was probably my favorite of the character-driven dramas this summer. And another one was Master Gardener, Paul Schrader film, which I doubt was over on Maui. Nope, and that was a good film. And then another film called The Lesson with Richard E. Grant in a leading role for a change. And that was another excellent film. And do you consider Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, a summer film? I think it was in May, but
I think here's how we gauge them here, Terry, in on the Hawaii Film Critics Society. Summer starts when the requisite sequel for Fast and the Furious starts. That's when summer starts. So,
and when was that this year? I don't know.
That was, I think, in April, wasn't it? Or was it? It was. No, it was at the end of
May
19th. May 19th. You're right. All right. So that's a little. Barry doesn't like my calendar, but I measure all summer movies. Summer starts when the next Fast and Furious comes out. That's how I just that's how I measure it. But yes, I do believe
missing 3 years. Great.
I think you can make Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, a summer film. Because from what I understand, it was only in theaters for a very short time, but it found a little audience when it came to VOD or video on demand. And yep. It's been getting some resounding reviews. Did you enjoyed that?
I did very much. It was probably, you know, when I saw that movie at the end, the whole audience clapped. That only happens once or twice a year at the most. And I felt it too. It's like, this was a really entertaining movie that had important things to say. And yeah, I loved it. It might have been my most enjoyable time in the movies this year. I liked it that much.
Yeah. What I think is currently happening, and here's my take on summer 2023. And, you know, if you guys don't think I'm correct, please let me know. But I think that comic book movie mania has, we have finally hit the fatigue portion of that. I think that comic book movie fatigue is actually a thing, and it actually hit. I think that because of that, I think that what has happened is that everything after Endgame has not been up to snuff for comic book film. And I think that's why we saw the dissolving of the Marvel's next phase after Endgame. Also why I think Flash didn't do as well. Flash, to be fair, was not bad. I thought it started well, but it didn't end well, as it were. Some people think the exact opposite. But I think we're at that point. And I think that's why there was such fervor around Oppenheimer and Barbie. These were not comic book properties. People were looking for something else to hold on to, I think. And I think that that is what – I think that that is – I think character-driven film is making a comeback even in the summer. Because I don't know if you guys know this, but IMAX has actually prioritized Dune over the Marvels, which has never happened before. They've actually prioritized a Warner Brothers Dune sequel over – a comic book movie like the Marvels, which is coming out. So I was just reading that article about it, and it looks like character-driven dramas and or other films that are not in that. I think the comic book movie, I guess, it was just the overwhelming comic book movies have become a little more stale. And I think people are looking for other films to cling to. And I think that, in my opinion, I think that this was kind of a disappointing as far as movies goes, as far as the depth and the width and breadth of film. There wasn't as many this summer that I had fun with, but there were some gems, in my opinion. So with that in mind, Terry, I'm going to start with you. What were your best films of the summer of 2023, sir?
Okay. Well, I've had the comic book fatigue for a long time, way before this summer. probably my favorite film was Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Followed by the movie called Past Lives by it was directed by a woman named Celine Song, and it's a kind of autobiographical movie. Have any of you had a chance to see it?
No,
It's on video on demand.
Yes,
I want to see it because I am a huge fan of A24, and I like the fact that they take risks and they do films that aren't necessarily something that would be considered mainstream, like Past Lives. I mean, so you know, these are the guys that made Lamb, or these are the guys that actually distributed Lamb and Hereditary and Midsommar and things of that ilk. So anything, and Talk to Me. They did Talk to Me as well. So I am all for Past Lives. I heard it is a very heavy drama, and I mean,
it is pretty heavy drama. I mean, it had legs over here. I was really surprised because when I saw it, I thought it wouldn't last very long. It was too good, and it was playing, you know, at Kahala Mall, which is where all the art type theater movies show that usually disappear after a week. If you're not quick, you miss them. Yeah. But this one went on and on. But it's. You know, it's about a Korean woman based on the actual filmmaker who grew up to about the age of 7 or 8 in Korea, and then her family moved to North America. But she had a childhood friend, a boy, that they were just super close for their whole childhood, and now they're separated and apart, and then like 12 years later, when they're both in their late teens or early 20s, they reconnect on Skype because it's like 2012 or something when that happens. And they realize they still really care a lot about each other, but they can't be together. She's studying to be a playwright at Columbia University, as the director did. He's studying engineering in Korea. They just can't get it together. And she says, let's not torture ourselves. Let's not talk anymore on Zoom. Let's just stop. And so they stop. 12 years later, he contacts her, and now she's married to an American guy, and he wants to come and see her one more time. And so the movie is about what happens when the three of them are all in the same place. And it's pretty intense. It's sad. It's melancholy. It's like, it's a movie about sadness about the paths you didn't take in your life that you could have, and it might have been just as good as the one you're on, but you didn't do that.
I was getting a lot of Before Trilogy vibes seeing the trailer.
It's a strong movie. You know, it's a bittersweet, but it's really good. It was probably my favorite drama this summer.
Wow. I am definitely going to put that on my list. Then I already have it in my queue on my my video.
Unfortunately, it still costs $19.99 to view it on, you know, online or on demand or whatever. It's still kind of expensive, but and you know, in another month or two, it'll come down to $5 or $6. So
yeah, for sure. I think I'll give it but I will definitely give that a whirl. Now, Jaron, how about you, sir? What was what would you say has been some of your best films of summer 2023?
5 probably would go to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
That one, I mean, knowing a lot of the drama that went on behind the scenes and a lot of the works and efforts and over the last 5 years, specifically just for that part 1, That one just gets a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer and Barbie definitely take fourth and third place for sure. Both character-driven movies. And it's kind of funny because even the demographic, it's just very completely divided on its audience. Like the people who hyped it up and the people who really took, really walked away with something with it, especially like the morals of the characters, it not being such a mainstream ending, you know, like a lot of it had consequences and a lot of it, you know, kind of had their, you know, kind of like little fluff wrap up. But yeah, both movies were unexpectedly really good. Second would be Talk to Me. That was unexpectedly, I thought it was going to be one of those like overhyped psychological, like supernatural thrillers. You know, and a lot of people will go into this movie kind of like thinking, oh man, like kind of like Hereditary. Like there are some people who think that they want straight up horror, but it really is the character driven stories and a lot of the so-called melancholy vibes that really push that horror, and it really like comes out. So if you hear people comparing it to Hereditary, it does kind of drive in those similar tones. And I probably would have to say, and not because it was free, but because I think my number one would have to go to Joyride, because comedies post, like post-COVID and everything like that, comedies, good comedies, even though they have some low-hanging fruit, have been very difficult to come by. But to be in a movie theater where everyone around you is on the same vibe, everybody is laughing, everybody is connecting with the characters, and at some point, I mean, a few people, especially some grown men, actually started to cry at some of the more sentimental scenes. But to hear just everyone laughing at all, like hearing a lot of the chemistry, a lot of the characters' dynamics, and just a lot of that, just have everyone laughing their butts off. That was amazing. So Joyride.
Wow. I was not expecting that at all. I've been looking forward to seeing. I didn't catch it in the theater because it wasn't there too long, and it just kind of just took off. So I didn't have a chance to go watch it, which was a kind of a shame. So I'm glad you did. I will definitely watch it. So Joyride and Past Lives is in my are on my list. Now, Professor Barry.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
Now, you have a love-hate relationship with summer, as far as summer movies.
I do.
Yes, you do. Okay, I'm just putting it out there. What were the hits for you in summer 2023?
My top five actually includes two comic book movies. So it's not that I disagree with anyone who's feeling comic book movie fatigue, because it's a real thing. There's been peaks and valleys. I adored Wakanda Forever, and I just love Shang-Chi. I watched that film over and over again. But there have been some really bad comic book movies. There's been too many of them. And because they're so long and they require you to have an encyclopedic knowledge of every one, and you're supposed to be engaged with the last 15 minutes of them that you get to see after sitting through 10 minutes of end credits, it's a lot to ask. I think, you know, I think a lot of them, they just don't deliver on all the things that they used to. And we're just the freshness of them just isn't quite there.
I think it's, may I interject here and say that I think that they're missing purpose. With the original 12 years of what we got in the beginning, there was purpose. There was a story. There was at least there was some kind of overarching story where we were going. It seems like after Endgame, the all purpose was kind of thrown to the wind. And I just feel like there's no progression. It didn't feel like anything was connected. And I think that's why your assessment is absolutely correct. In the respect of that, that's why I think, because I am too suffering from, you know, comic book movie fatigue. I'm it's not like I'm rushing out to see these movies anymore as I used to. And I'm going, I think I can wait, or I'll watch it next week or whatever. So I'm kind of with you on that. But I can't wait to hear what your comic book movies are on your list.
Absolutely. There's too many of these things, because on Disney Plus, I mean, it's just like, how do you keep up with them?
It's oversaturated.
Well, you know, a couple summers ago, they had the new Doctor Strange movie, and I was so excited because it was Sam Raimi. And the thing about that film, not only is it very heavily diluted Sam Raimi, but that film demands that you watch all of WandaVision, all the Doctor Who movies, all the Marvel movies. Like, it's just too much heavy lifting. And I don't think the movie even delivered just as a film, let alone something you needed to study up for to watch and enjoy.
I agree.
Number five, one of my favorite films of the summer was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It's a sad film. I love how sad it is. I love the humanity of it. I felt something watching it. As you know all too well, Greg, I didn't think the first one would be a hit because I thought, okay, the guy from Parks and Rec and the biggest name in the movie is Rocket Raccoon and Bradley Cooper's not even in the film. That film doesn't have a chance. And I saw it with the opening night and I've been eating crow ever since. So with this new film, they make it all about Rocket Raccoon. And I was really moved by that. I was moved by that story. I was stunned by the violence. I was stunned by just how gloomy that film was and how James Gunn is still taking really interesting, bold chances, particularly in terms of tone with that franchise. I don't know if it's the last one. If it is, I think they're ending on a really strong note.
I have to tell you that Guardians was – it's not my favorite. Guardians Volume 3 is not my favorite. The first one will always be my favorite. I think it goes in order. I think first, second, and third are my favorite. I think the third took some real chances, and I think it succeeded and failed all at the same time because when you watch that film, you find out that Rocket is the heart of the Guardians. He's basically – that's who he is. And without him – for him – okay, spoilers – for him being dead for more than half the film, you really understand why that – you really see that the effect that it has on the crew, and it almost makes it not pleasurable to watch them together, right? Because everybody's consistently angry, and they're upset at one another. And then you have the villain who – and they're tackling some really heavy subjects. I mean, they're tackling, like, animal cruelty – child sex trafficking, like they're tackling fascism and eugenics, and it's like there's some really heavy undertones or overtones in this movie, and I was like, I don't know if I was ready, I was prepared for that, but I've watched it again and I actually enjoyed it more the second time I've seen it. So I really hope you're right. I really do hope this is the last Guardians. I think it would be an appropriate one to end on. I'm very shocked that it's on your list, to be fair.
My number four, and this shocks me because I'm not a fan of what Disney's been doing over the last few years. I feel like they've been recycling material to no end. It's not fun anymore. I grew up with Roger Rabbit. Where are the bold swings at original material? They did a film this summer that didn't do very well, and I certainly was going to avoid it because I thought from the trailer it looks like Inside Out, but I'm a big fan of Elemental. I am. It surprised me, and I saw it twice. I took my daughter to see it the first time. I did cry through a lot of it. I was a lot like the main character in the film, oddly enough. And I think the film succeeds because it is a straightforward comedy. It does have some of the same structuring of Zootopia, and it's a film that in a very simple way is illustrating why bigotry is so pointless and ridiculous. And I don't feel like that's a subject matter, a topic, if you will ever go out of style. And I love that Disney made a film that does that, but it's also entertaining, also very sweet. And it's a tribute to the immigrant experience. So I really like the film. I was surprised because I wasn't even planning on seeing it, but it's like, there's nothing to take my daughter to. So I thought this looks sweet enough. And I kept hearing good things about it. I really loved Elemental. It's the only film I saw twice this summer.
Wow. I'm very surprised because I have heard nothing but bad things about the film. And I hear it constantly gets compared to Inside Out, which I absolutely love. I think Inside Out was great. I'm a huge fan of Inside Out. So when they started comparing it to that and it wasn't getting very favorable reviews, and I don't mean us as critic reviews, I just mean from just people coming out of the theater, they weren't very impressed with it. I'm surprised to hear it, and now I actually want to see it. I did miss that as well. So you liked it.
Very much. Very much.
I have to say, when you equate bigotry to Elements, I'm not seeing how that gels, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
It's about how the fire people and the water people and the earth people and the cloud people don't get along for various reasons.
The dialogue makes
those, you know, those suggestions that this is real world bigotry, and it's depicted in this sense of like, okay, the cloud people and the fire people don't get along, and the water people obviously hate the fire people for various reasons. And it's creating a solution to that, but it's also just showing, like, you know, that there's no need for any kind of division. I just don't feel like that message ever goes out of style. And I like that Disney did a film that addresses it in such an entertaining and funny way.
I
adored the film. I didn't think I would.
Wow. Unbelievable. So what's your number three?
Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning Part 1. I think that's the full title. It's a mouthful. And by the way, Dead Reckoning means nothing. It's like the title Batman Forever. What does it mean? Nothing, but it sounds cool. I think Dead Reckoning is wonderful. I really do. It's honestly my favorite Mission Impossible since the first
one. Really? Wow.
For me, the first one's always been the best one. I love that they brought back Kittredge. I love that it's a very morose film. It's a dark movie. I thought the stakes were especially interesting, how high they were. The cliffhangers were wonderful, and I thought the film just kept getting better and better as it went along. I'm still, you know, he'll remain one of the most controversial movie stars of my time, but he's still one of my favorite movie stars. I love Tom Cruise. I love what he did in the film. And I know it didn't do very well, which I thought was fascinating, because I don't know anyone who saw it who didn't love it, but because it came a week before the freight train of Barbenheimer, Dead Reckoning did quite poorly. And I think people are going to rediscover it. Very nice, Jaron. I think people are going to rediscover it as it goes into digital platforms. But yeah, I love it. I think it's a terrific movie.
It's still playing over here.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think the Dead Reckoning was good. Although I have to tell you, I didn't think it was as dark as you think it was. I thought it actually was a little more like it didn't take itself as seriously, because there's some very funny, like, things that happened in the film that I wasn't expecting. I mean, some of the action scenes were a bit funny, you know? I mean, especially at the end in the train scene. So I'm surprised. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying that I'm surprised you found it as dark as you did. I thought that the story was actually very, very relevant. And yes. That's what I liked about it. I really liked that. So, I'm with you on Dead Reckoning. Good choice.
Thank you. And then Across the Spider-Verse, my other comic book movie choice.
Number two.
I mean, it's poetry. It's poetry. I mean, this is a new way of telling a story. This is using color to evoke emotion. This is using color to create mood. This is using color and editing to establish tonal shifts. It's an endlessly complicated film, and yet it tells its complicated story with a clarity. I love Miles Morales. I love the look of this film. The first film was an adjustment, because I thought, this is kind of an aggressive style. Maybe I'm just getting old. But the first movie engaged me emotionally, and this film did it tenfold. I love this movie. I can't wait to see it again. I think it's a little much for my 7-year-old, so I'm going to wait till I Beatrice see it. But I love it. I think it's one of the best films of the year.
Yeah, I brought my girlfriend's nephew to Across the Spider-Verse, and he wasn't really as enamored with it as the first one. I think, like, a lot of the character and world building in the first half was a little heavy for him. And, like, I was completely into it. But, like, once it started picking up, it was fantastic all the way through.
Fair enough. All right. What's that number one?
My number one favorite film of the summer, and it's currently my number one for the year. That, you know, these things change as months go on. And we're about to go into fall movie season, where I think it's, like, what, 500 movies in 4 months? It's insanity. But, no, my favorite film that I saw this summer is Asteroid City. Wes Anderson, he's one of these filmmakers who, you know, his best films are art. His worst films feel like self-parody. And I know this movie rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. It was compared to everything from Isle of Dogs to The Life Aquatic, which, by the way, are two of my favorites of his.
Aquatic is my favorite Anderson film, period.
There you go. And I would compare it to that. I think the performances by Jason Schwartzman and Scarlett Johansson are two of the best of the year. I found myself so engaged by this world. There are so many scenes in it that I feel play like perfect little movies. I love that the movie has so much to say about acting and theater as much as it is about a time that has gone by. I love that it's an alien invasion movie. I adore this movie. I really, it took me to a place that I'd love to go back again. There's a brilliance to this movie. I feel like I'm not even completely connecting with. And I got to see this movie with Terry, which was super cool. We got to see this one together. And I don't think Terry liked it as much as I do. But yeah, I'm still gaga for this movie. I love it.
I'm going to jump the gun here a second, and I'm going to tell you that was my biggest disappointment of 2023.
Oh, man.
Yep. I thought Asteroid City had potential. I love everything that Wes Anderson does, and I mean everything. I am one of the hardcore Wes Anderson guys. I think that everything he does is brilliant. I think the looks of the film are always evocative. I even like the one that just came out, The French Dispatch. But this one, for some reason, what I found disappointing for me was that he was trying to tell two stories at once. And I felt that the focus on two stories really took me out of the film. I would have taken either one, but I didn't like having both of them coming at me at the same time. I really thought I was really, as soon as that movie started, I was in it. The music, the music and the set pieces and everything were great. And then once we cut to, I thought the thing with Bryan Cranston in the beginning was going to be just like an introduction, but it started to permeate in the film. And I felt that it was losing my focus. I felt that for me, it felt like the fun that we were having in Asteroid City and the aliens and the kids that were coming for the Stargazers. And I was really into that. But every time they'd switch over to tell that other story, I got completely detached because we're talking about something else. So I was really disappointed because I really wanted to like it more than I did. So I thought the performances were very well done. I mean, you know, Jason Schwartzman is always great. I don't know, Wes Anderson has this hold over some of these guys. I thought Tom Hanks was okay. He's never worked with Wes Anderson before. Yeah, I don't believe. Yeah, that for me, I thought that was a role for Bill Murray, or heck, even for Bruce Willis. You know what I mean? I don't think that Tom got the quirk that the other two guys had, right? He didn't get the quirk. So so to be fair to him, I think there was hits, but there was a lot of miss for me, and I was really bummed about Asteroid City. I'm surprised it's your number one. That's crazy. I was not expecting
one,
that.
Buddy. Number
wow,
one.
Wow, unbelievable. All right. Well, let me give you, if I can't give you my top five, maybe I'll give you my top four, maybe, because it's been a little difficult this season. I will say, where I should start is, I'm not going to go in any particular order per se, but I will say that Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 is definitely one of the best films of the summer. Tom Cruise consistently delivers on summer movies. Tom has this presence about him on screen. He also understands, at least in my opinion, he understands what people go to the movies for, especially in the summer, right? This movie, it was not political. There wasn't anything there. This was something to have a good time with, right? This is all that movie was. And I really appreciate that. I mean, he did it last summer with Top Gun Maverick, the movie that literally saved movie theaters. Thanks, Tom Cruise. Yet again, everyone should pray at the altar of Tom Cruise because of that, I guess. So I would say that Dead Reckoning is definitely one of those films. Now, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to tell you something. And if this had to be at the bottom, this would be at the bottom, even though it's in no particular order. I had so much fun with Meg 2, you wouldn't believe it. And let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you guys something. I don't like to use this word a lot, but I hate Meg 1. I hated the first Meg. I hated it. Despised it. Now, There was something interesting about Meg 2 that I thought made it better, was that there was actual human drama. This was a very fun B movie. This was a sci-fi B movie. This is exactly what it was. And it, and the fact that they injected human drama, at least to some degree, made this a much more enjoyable movie, right? It wasn't just a monster movie for me. And I really, really enjoyed myself. Is it one of the best movies of the year? Absolutely not. Was it a fun summer movie? Yeah, gosh darn right it was. Loved it. So for that, I think that a lot of people have slept on Meg 2. Ironically, it is now on video on demand because it hasn't been doing very well in the theaters. So no big surprise. The other film, I do have a couple comic book movies on my list as well. I thought Blue Beetle was fun. If no one has seen Blue Beetle yet, I thought Blue Beetle was a lot better than I expected. I wasn't expecting as good a movie as I got. Now remember, this Blue Beetle movie was actually headed for the streaming service. This was headed to Max with $100 million budget. And it's Terry's like, yeah, exactly right. This is a lot of money. And the irony is that now it's been released and this is going to end up on streaming services next week. This movie didn't do well in the theaters either. And I got to tell you, I think people are going to miss out. Unfortunately, what happened was is that the director, Angel Manuel Soto, I guess he had made some comments that people didn't like. I guess I don't know if they were activist comments or what have you. And then he got a lot of criticism for it. And now nobody went to go watch the film. So I don't know if that had any effect on the film or what have you. But let me tell you something. I thought that Blue Beetle was more fun than I expected. And I really, really enjoyed Blue Beetle. It is a great, fun, just comic book movie. It didn't overstay its welcome, which was great. I thought that I enjoyed. I will say that it's hard. George Lopez was the worst thing about the movie, but I will say that it's hard to be the wacky uncle in anything, right? That's not an easy part to play. So, you know, I will cut him some slack on that, but I do encourage everybody, once it comes out on VOD, if you missed it in the theaters, Blue Beetle was a lot of fun. And I think that Jolo Maradueña, unfortunately, because of the strike, people are going to sleep on this kid. And I think this kid has a lot of potential. This is the kid that's in Karate Kid in Cobra Kai. And I think that this was his breakout movie. And unfortunately for the strike, no one is going to get to see Jolo in another light. And that's unfortunate because I think that that's a very talented kid. So good. It's unfortunate for him, but I hope he gets some other projects and people get to discover him more, at least discover Blue Beetle on your Apple or your Vudu or what have you. So I really enjoyed that. I will say that I also, if I had to have a number one movie of the summer, number one movie of the summer so far I don't know. That's tough. I'll give you one. It's a tough one because I think that Oppenheimer was fantastic. I know Barry didn't like it. I saw his review of it. I almost canceled him for that review. but I think I try to be a steward or a steward of that history because I kind of grew up with it. I had no choice because of my father. I thought Oppenheimer was spectacular. It was beautiful. There are a lot of people felt it was long. I didn't feel the length. I that thing was moving at a clip for me. Before I knew it, the movie was over, and I didn't believe it. So I thought the performances were great. Cillian Murphy was fantastic. I thought that Emily Blunt was great. She was cold and just so, like, she was incredible. I thought Matt Damon was wonderful. The thing about Christopher Nolan is this, and a lot of people complain about it, you know. And Christopher Nolan has said it in the past, and I never got it until now. A lot of people complain that you can never hear the dialogue in his movies. That's always a complaint, right? Now I understand. Well, after watching Oppenheimer, now I understand why. because what he's doing as a filmmaker is he is showing you and not necessarily telling you, right? That's what you're supposed to do as a filmmaker. You show me, don't tell me, show me. And what's important are the visuals. He wants you to concentrate on what he's putting up on the screen, not necessarily the dialogue. And I really understood that after watching Oppenheimer. I thought
it was one of the talkiest movies of the year. They never stopped talking.
That's right. They didn't. And I have to tell you something. That last half of that, the last third of that film, the last hour, I think that last hour deserves. I think that Robert Downey Jr. deserves an Oscar for his performance as Strauss.
Absolutely.
He's amazing. He is fantastic. Always. I mean, and at least a supporting actor Oscar for that. He's amazing. I loved Oppenheimer. I was completely enamored with it. And just knowing the history that I do, it was really good to kind of step into that. The irony is that, not that I want to get into the history. Did you know there was more than one of those little towns that was made? There were little towns in other parts of the country during World War II that were trying to attempt the same thing. It's very interesting. And that was something that they didn't touch on in the film, but I knew that from history. It was very cool. But anyway, I really liked Oppenheimer. But my number one film of, and this was a tough one. I was sad to see Oppenheimer drop to number one, but I'm with you guys all the way. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was one of the greatest animated films I have ever seen. I could not believe how good that film is. I was not expecting that. This movie is completely leaps and bounds better than Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. There is more meaning. There is more feeling. There is more story. There is more connection as an audience member to all of the characters within it. There is purpose. And I have to tell you, I was shocked by the end of that film how much I liked it. I couldn't believe it. And I didn't realize when I got to the end of the film, I was sitting there for like 2 hours and 2.5 hours. I couldn't believe it because this movie is a 2.5 hour movie. And I'm like, it's been 2.5 hours. I couldn't even believe it. And I really think what really makes this movie move is the character development, getting to know his mother, getting to know the dad, getting to know Miles Morales' situations in the film. There are things that are very well done in this film that live action movies can't get right. And I have to say that Spider-Man movie has just exceeded my expectations. And dare I say, this may be my favorite Spider-Man movie, live action or animated, period. That's how strongly I feel about this film. And I think it should be on the list for one of the best pictures of the year. That's just me.
Absolutely.
So at least animated film. I don't know how they're going to do the Oscars this year with all the rule changes. I don't know if it can be animated or if it actually gets a best picture or not. I don't know how it works yet. We'll get to that when we get to that next year. But yeah, I am totally flabbergasted by how much I loved that movie. So Now that we've kind of gone on with this, as far as our best films, does anybody in this, Terry, I'm going to go to you first. Are there any disappointments that you had? I named mine. I was willing to put myself out there. Were there any disappointments for you that you thought were going to be good and maybe just didn't hit the mark?
Well, usually I try to avoid any movie that I expect will disappoint me.
So Terry's been exposed. He's exposing himself right now.
I don't see many. If I think I probably won't like that, then I'm just not going to go.
Right.
So what was I disappointed? So many movies that I didn't want to see, like The Boogeyman or Transformers or, I don't like to be disappointed. It's really hard for me to say that I was disappointed by anything I saw this summer because I pretty much enjoyed everything that I went to see, including, and I was surprised, I didn't want to go to see this movie. My wife dragged me to Strays. Have you seen
No her? Way.
I didn't want to go, but she goes to see anything I want to see. So I went. And, you know, we both just laughed our butts off. I mean, it's just a dumb, crazy movie, but it was funny. I mean, you know, I mean, a raunchy humor and just about every line. I don't know how you could quote it without.
Terry, I don't think you're old enough for that kind of filthy film.
It surprised me that I enjoyed it because I thought, oh God, I don't want to see this.
Ironically, I shouldn't say ironically, but that literally is bombing at the box office at this point. That's the one with Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart?
Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx. Yeah, that's it. And Jamie Foxx.
There's just so many, you know, like one of the jokes that I liked that I didn't think was dumb was the dogs that are all talking about. You know what? Have any of you seen it?
No, I have not. I had no interest.
Well, I don't blame you. But the dogs have this, they talk among themselves and they say, you know what? Our poop is valuable because you notice every time, you know, people are out with their dog and the dog poops, they gather it up in a bag and take it away. They must be selling it somewhere. We're not getting anything out of our poop, but they're stealing it from us. I mean, it's like, who thinks like that? It's such a comic idea. And they really, hilarious. Of course, they really believe it. Yeah, the dog's point of view is done quite well. Anyway,
so what you're saying is that
I'm not recommending it, but.
So what you're saying is this isn't Homeward Bound. Is that what you're saying?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, the main dog character is a terrier whose owner hates him and is trying to get rid of him. And he finally, I mean, he takes him to drive. He throws a tennis ball way off in the distance. He gets in his truck and goes home. And the dog chases the ball down and figures out how to get home. And, you know, he's really happy, you know, and his master is, of course, not. But the dog misinterprets everything. He thinks this guy loves him. The master hates him. And he only has this dog because he lived with his girlfriend. They broke up. She wanted the dog. He wouldn't let her have the dog, even though he didn't really want the dog. Anyway, the dog finally gets left like 100 miles from his home, and he's a stray. He becomes a stray, and so he has to learn to. But other dogs he befriends, who befriend him, convince him, hey, this guy hated you. You know, he treated you like shit. You need to get your revenge on this guy. And so they make this pact that they're going to find him. They're going to find their way back there and going to bite his dick off.
See, this is too, you are too young for this. All right.
that's their goal. The whole film, they're trying to get to this guy so they can bite his dick off. And they succeed.
Wow, this is I'm surprised that this movie didn't do better at the box office. I'm surprised. To be honest, I'm surprised that this movie came out when it did. I thought I saw the trailer for it and I thought, why isn't this in September? You know, like I figured we'd be pushed out from summer, but it made the summer cut. So yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, now because of Terry's review, I may have to watch this movie. All right. We'll see. We'll see.
Well, don't blame me if you hate it.
Jaron, was there any disappointments for you this summer?
Absolutely. But my number one, and I stress this with Aaron a lot because we always do this. We always go to the $5 Mystery Monday movies.
Yes.
And there are, you know, sometimes I swear I miss out on all the good ones, and I always tend to go when the stinkers are on.
Oh.
And this one was so bad that it didn't even come out on its release date this past week.
Wait, so did anybody get their junk? No, wait, hang on a second. Did anybody get their junk bitten off in the film that you watched?
What do you mean?
Did anybody get their junk bitten off like in Strays?
No.
Okay, good. What movie is it?
But somebody definitely started snoring.
And oh, really?
Yeah, that bad. When you hear somebody in the audience.
What was the film? I missed it.
Retribution with Liam Neeson.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was the mystery movie.
Now, hang on a second.
It was supposed to come on Friday.
Wasn't... I thought that I saw the trailer for this. It seems like he had said that he wasn't going to do any more movies like this, but he keeps doing movies like this.
Right? So, you know, he says he's not going to do action films anymore.
Yeah.
And that's literally that. The movie is very bland. He is just driving and talking on the phone. He does nothing. Driving Miss Daisy gets more action out of that.
Wow. Yeah.
And
wow,
even the twist at the end of revealing who was messing with him was just the motives and who it was just so silly. It felt like a TNT movie. It felt just like that.
Fair enough. That makes sense. Okay.
My God, to see him just in his suit again, being stuck in the past, being stuck in the driver's seat because he can't move, or else the car will blow up. There's a sensory plate right underneath it. And this guy is like, well, you're going to do exactly what I say. And you got his annoying kids in the back who can't hear the conversation that he's having over the phone. Oh, and then gosh, these kids are just bickering, going back and forth. And they're trying to get out of the car. It's like, if anybody gets out of the car, I'll blow it up. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's trying to be Speed. And wow, it never gets any exciting. There's even a part where he's just trying to convince the officer that he's not the guy, because everything is sort of set up to make it look like he's been killing everyone that's dying around him. And the cop is still trying to be convinced that, oh, so you're not the person behind this. And I'm like, well, you can test it. You can pull him out of the car and see if it blows up. Yeah, I don't know. It was a lot of yelling and crying and apologizing, but that's all it really was Liam Neeson on a call.
You know what's funny is that Retribution isn't the only movie that didn't make its release date or its projected release date. Gran Turismo did the same thing.
That one got pushed back.
Yeah, so it did.
This past weekend, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was supposed to come out like earlier this month.
Right.
So, yeah, and from what I hear, that's a Neil Blomkamp film, and I'm actually kind of excited to see it. So I hope it's good.
It's good. It's good.
It is. So you saw it?
Yeah, sorry. Working on a review for that one. But
okay, good. Well, I don't want to ruin your review. So, okay, I definitely want to see Gran Turismo. Barry.
Yes.
I've already named my disappointment. What was your biggest disappointment of Summer Movie 2023? Summer Movie Wrap-Up 2023.
Well, you know, the Flash was pretty bad, and that was a shock, because the film still feels like it's incomplete. For a movie that got pushed back so far, it feels like they're still working on it. It's not entirely Ezra Miller's fault, but that performance or performances, it's a very much of the Shia LaBeouf school of acting. It's just manic. It's one-note manic times two. And then you have the beginning of the movie, which doesn't really work. The center of it is interesting because of Batman and Supergirl. But then the ending is just one disaster after another. And what's really strange, and I wonder if I'm just a fanboy who realizes, I suspect there's others who do, the plot was basically stolen from Masters of the Universe, the motion picture. Remember how Courtney Cox uses time travel to save her parents?
Yeah.
That's the plot of Flash.
Except I got that. It's like, I got the same thing. It's Masters of the Universe mixed with Back to the Future. That's exactly what it is.
And a can of tomatoes is the totem that saves the day. I thought, well, that's interesting, because if anything this movie's gonna receive is a lot of rotten tomatoes being hurled at it. I didn't think Michael Keaton was enough to save it, and I thought the special effects were strangely bad, bizarrely bad. There's a desperation to that film that was just, it was really depressing.
Yeah, so I have to tell you, I want to live in a universe where Eric Stoltz is McFly. I do want to live in that universe. I would love to have Aaron with me in that universe, just so that we know what it's like.
Oh, so, that would be true. That would truly be in the mouth of madness for Aaron to live in that world.
I think you're
right,
correct.
There, yeah.
Yeah. Another film I need to mention, because it was the one I looked forward to the most this summer, which was Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, because it's Indiana Jones.
I wanted to talk about that too.
Most excited, number one, couldn't wait to see it. And I still feel like that de-aging technology has such a long way to go. 20 yeah. minutes of it. It was the most ambitious use of it yet. And there were certainly little moments, little maybe screen captures that worked, but I'm looking at a special effect. I'm not looking at a performance I could lose myself to. We're just not there yet. So I'm looking at a special effect for 20 minutes that's calling attention to itself. And then you've got, you know, Harrison Ford in the 60s, which should be more interesting, and it just isn't. I think the third act of that movie, because it's so bonkers, is really good. I liked how
I'm totally with you.
I liked how crazy the movie gets at the end.
I agree.
I don't know if it completely salvages the film, but I love the third act twist. I thought, like, this is great. I could not have seen this coming. This is wonderful. And I like the way it wrapped up. So I do feel like it's just too many peaks and valleys. There's that term again. There's good things in it. It's not a terrible film, but I really wanted more from it. I just wish, you know, it's a problem if we're talking about the parts of the movie we like as opposed to all of it. And
correct.
You know, little flaws are one thing. One performance bad, one scene bad. But when you have whole sections of the film that really should have been reconsidered or just eliminated altogether, you know the film didn't deliver. So that was a heartbreaking one for me because I wanted to love it, and I found myself rooting for it when the movie was near over.
Well, what's interesting is that, first of all, let me just say this. Mutt got done dirty in that film. Mutt got done dirty real bad. All right? Number one. And that was sad. I was like, I could not believe they did that to him. I will say also that I didn't dislike it as much as you did. I thought the very first, the opening sequence on the train, very well done. I think everything in the middle is where it sagged. Sure. Everything. I believe that you are right, and I think that you're right. The 60s should have been more interesting in terms of indie because we have done – like I said, I'm one of the guys that I hold down love, and I hold the line with Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I defend that film. I really liked it. I thought it was good. It was in canon with what George Lucas wanted to do. You know, it wasn't a serial. It was a 50s B sci-fi film, and I really think that he nailed it with that. Even for as much as ridiculous as the action sequences are and some of the CGI is, I just chalk it up to the fact that that's George. Nothing in here, with the exception of the beginning sequence, felt like the spirit of what was done before. It makes Kingdom of the Crystal Skull better. That's the crazy part. It, right, Jaren? Am I lying?
I agree. And maybe I'm biased because I saw Kingdom of the Crystal Skull before I ever saw the trilogy. Maybe that's just an upbringing, and maybe that's just how I saw films, because Kingdom of the Crystal Skull actually made me want to revisit what the trilogy was. And I was like, wow, amazing. But yeah, Dial of Destiny, I mean, I still enjoyed it, but it did not feel like the first four.
The one thing that I didn't like is that it felt like these were three scripts and three ideas, three different scripts that were kind of crushed into one script. That's what it felt like to me. And it also felt like, and here's the other thing, and this is what I find incredibly disappointing here is this. I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge is incredibly talented and especially talented as a writer. I do not think that this is her vehicle. And that is, I'm just saying that as this is not, her performance in here was not that film. I think if you had omitted her from the film, I think it may have been better. If they had put Short Round in the film with Indy for the final adventure, this movie would have been probably 100 times better. Absolutely. But I will say, yeah, right? I mean, that would be their last crusade, and it ties the films together. Having Phoebe Waller-Bridge in the film just totally took me out of the film. And it's not her fault. It's the fault of the script. It's not her fault. It's the fault of the script and what they wrote. So, I mean, I did enjoy it. And like I said, I thought the ending was so bonkers that it fits in the canon of Indiana Jones. A lot of people disagree with me on that, but I'm with you, Barry. I think it totally fit. I thought the ending was absolutely precious with Marianne Ravenwood and him. I thought that was absolutely precious. But I can never forgive them for killing Mutt. Shia LaBeouf was supposed to be our next Indiana Jones. Never forget.
You know, that line, though, when they talk about why Mutt's not there.
Oh, yes!
It got to me. I really
it did.
I that well. That's when the movie started to work for me. When Antonio Banderas shows up, that's when I started to become invested. But the films, you know, and I'm like you. I don't like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull as much as you do, but I don't hate the film at all. I don't. But I think this film and that film have a problem in common, which is that there's just too many characters. There's too many villains. There's too many heroes. There's too many villains killing each other. There's too many heroes getting killed. Indiana Jones is running, and there's like five people running alongside him going, who are these people? I'm right. here for Indiana Jones.
Right, right. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And like I said, it wasn't that I hated it. I enjoyed it for what it was. I have to add it to my collection. So when it comes out next week, I'll probably add it to my collection and I'll watch it again. Now, before we get to looking forward to the fall, last movie I want to talk about before, unless there's anything else you guys want to talk about, let me know. I do want to broach the subject of Barbie. Now, the reason why I say this, Barry, Barry is assuming.
Well, I love that you're like, say. Okay, guys. I mean, I thought you were going to be like, okay, guys, Sound of Freedom. No, it's like, guys, I'm going to talk about Barbie. It's a very controversial movie, guys. So,
No, well, let's be honest. Before we get to Barbie, since you brought it up, Sound of Freedom has made a pile of money. And the studio that bought it, the studio that sold it begrudgingly to Angel Studios, which was Disney. This movie was made 5 years ago that never got released. This movie has done gangbusters at the theater. It has made its budget back and then some. It is probably one of the most successful, I would dare. It's not even independent. It was made by 20th Century Fox and it never got put out. Now, it's made like $175 million. That film was made a ton of cash. It catered to one audience or to a certain audience, and was very successful in that effect. I don't know if any of you guys saw it, but it's not John Wick of child sex trafficking films. That's not what this is. It's more of a drama. It's very deliberately paced. And it's about the process of how to get these kids back. It's very heavy. And if you haven't seen it, I encourage you. It should be coming out on VOD soon. But I do encourage people to watch Sound of Freedom. Now, getting back to the movie that stunned everybody. Barbie. Okay. Did you guys have fun with it? This is the biggest movie of the summer.
Yeah, I saw it opening day. I had the Barbenheimer double feature, and not to get all heavy handed, but it is the
Gary's last like,
film.
What?
It's the last film I saw at the Wharf Cinema Center, which is no longer, and it's in Lahaina. That was my favorite movie theater on planet Earth, and it's no longer. And I wore my pink shirt then as I am now. I saw Barbie, and I was in a theater full of moms and little girls, and I'm the weirdo in a pink shirt watching Barbie on opening day, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah.
Jaren?
I absolutely loved it. I was in a very rowdy crowd. We all dressed in pink. might I add, it was one of the more bizarre blockbuster type experiences, because you have the younger crowd that was just crickets. Like, they were so excited, but by the time the morals and the endings, they were just crickets.
Correct.
And the people who got something out of it, the people who actually reacted, were all the adults, all the, 18 and up, the people who know the dark side of life. And I walked away with it. I really liked it. Yeah.
The people that reacted most to this movie were the people that actually were raised with Barbie. That's the crazy part. And I agree with you, Jaren. I completely agree with you, Terry. I'm sure you have quite a massive collection of Barbies. Did you like the film?
Yeah, I loved it. I really did. It's such a great satire. I mean, I was really enjoying the whole Barbie world in the beginning. I love little details like she drinks her tea and there's nothing there. It's pretend. It's a pretend world she's living in. And when then she gets into the real world, someone gives her a cup of tea and it dribbles down her. I just love the way they played with, I was having fun at the movie, and then she goes into reality and it was like, Oh, this has gotten even better. This is such a great satire now where, you know, she goes to a group of girls and she expects to be revered. And they hate her. She says she set back the cause of feminism half a century. And she's like, whoa, whoa. And there's a marvelous scene where she sits on a park bench with an old lady. Do you remember that?
That is my favorite scene in the film.
Yeah. Love it. Just fantastic. I mean, if it hadn't been made by Greta Gerwig, and I've liked all her films, I might not have gone unless I read all the things about it and then said, oh, well, I better go see it. But the fact that she was the one who was doing it made me want to see it right at the start. And I was not disappointed. And I just think it's marvelous that she could appeal to so many people, from young to old, from people who grew up with Barbies and loved playing with them to people who didn't and hated Barbie. It's like, wow, it's quite the accomplishment. And to have people still now going dressed in pink to see Barbie, it's multiple times, many of them, you know, it's a phenomenon. And I'm happy that it's so good, because you know, many movies that are massively popular like that, I don't really care for a lot of them. But this one, I really think is a terrific movie.
I don't know if you guys heard this or are familiar with it. Did you know that Greta Gerwig had to fight the studio to keep that bus bench scene with the old lady in the film?
Yes.
She had to actually fight with them because they didn't understand it. And right. I tell you what, there is... I'm going to tell you something. If that is one of the most important scenes in that movie for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I hated it.
What are you talking about, Gene?
Okay. Hear me out. All right. Hear me out. Okay. Here's the thing. So this movie is not, I'm an all-American male. Okay, this is not for dudes. Okay, so I have to say, after watching the film, okay, hey, stay with me, stay on my side here. Just give me a minute. So here's the thing: is that there were things that didn't make sense to me, and then like I didn't understand how, because of living in Barbie Land, and this is just one thing, and you know, I don't want to get too deep into it, but living in Barbie Land, how these that women controlled everything from the Supreme Court to the president. This was their world. The dudes played second fiddle, right, to them, right? All the Kens were, you know, they wanted to, of course, cater to Barbie's every whim, right? That was their goal for the day, right? So what I didn't so the things that I had issue with was, you know, I thought when they went to the real world, I thought it was great where it happened to be the reversal. And then we find out that Barbie is sexualized and he's more put on a pedestal. I thought that was very good. That made sense in the Barbie world. What I didn't, when they go back to Barbie Land, that was what doesn't make sense. If you have all of these smart women that are living in Barbie Land, how are they so easily duped by these Kens that apparently got the word that, hey, listen, we could take over Barbie Land, right? Kendom, as it were. So there were little things like that really bothered me in the film that was like, I don't know if I like this or if I don't like it. I just chalked it up to it not being for me. But here's what I found fascinating. When I started to change my mind on this film from hating it to mildly hating it, I'm kidding, by the way. What I'm saying is that when I heard reviews come out, and that's what I thought was interesting, just reviews by people, not like actual critics, but from normal people. People from all walks of life found different things in the film that they connected to. What's ironic is that there are people that are completely on the left side of the political spectrum that absolutely love this film. And there are people that are completely on the right side spectrum of politics and love the film. I think what really fascinates me about Barbie itself is that there is an opportunity there that different audiences get different things out of the film, and that's what you want, right? There are people that are basically on the left that believe this is very much a film about feminism and down with the patriarchy. There are people that are on the right that believe this is about affirming womanhood and about conservative values and how important it is to be a woman. It's fascinating. And like, you know, the reason why a lot of people are like, well, why didn't Barbie and Ken get together? That's because Ken is a cuck. He's got to find his own thing. I find it fascinating. There are so many people that are completely on different ends of a political spectrum that found things to like in this Barbie movie. And it actually made me respect the Barbie movie more. And I find that fascinating. And that's what I think is so interesting about movies like this, right? When you have people that are completely from different walks of life and find something to like about it, I think is great. And this is why this movie is made over $700 million worldwide. And I for me, I'm you know, this movie was not made for me. This movie was made for girls in mind. So whatever my critique is should be less important because this was not made for me per se, right? So, you know, it tackled a lot of social issues, and it didn't in such a way that it impressed different people from different walks of life. So I have a lot of respect for Barbie and what it did as far as bringing people together from all walks of life. So for me, although it's not for me, I actually respect it more. And now I'm going to have to watch it again. So just to see it.
It's flat out funny. I mean, no matter where you are, it's funny. It's a really funny movie.
The only person in that film that I didn't think needed to be in there, and if they weren't in there, it wouldn't have mattered because it wouldn't have changed a thing, was Will Ferrell. Yeah. I thought that if Will Ferrell was not in the movie at all, it wouldn't have changed a thing about the film.
But it was wonderful how he wanted to put her back in the box. You know, I mean,
well, to be fair, that one scene is pretty, I have to say, is pretty great. I've got to admit. Barbie, to be fair, Barbie was a juggernaut this summer. I think that people are, knowing Hollywood, once this strike is over, they're going to probably look for more films to, I guess, in the market of toys again, right? I think we're going to be pushed to that, maybe. I mean, after the Transformers film, that looks like the new Transformers film is going to have G.I. Joe together. And I think after the success of Barbie, we're probably going to see more toy franchises become film fodder, as it were. I think that that's going to be the case. So, and by the way, last but not least, before we move to fall movie season, I hope and pray that they do not make a sequel to Barbie. This movie is no. And don't laugh. Don't laugh. What I'm saying is that this movie is such the perfect microcosm, and it's come at such a time that I don't think that this movie requires a sequel. It will ruin what has already been made. And I'm with Terry, by the way. I really like Greta Gerwig's work. Lady Bird, her version of Little Women, her performance in Frances Ha with her husband directing Noah Baumbach. I'm a fan of Greta Gerwig. I like her because she has a lot of things to say. You can tell when you watch Lady Bird and even Barbie that there are things that she's struggling with as a woman, possibly as a, you know, like in Lady Bird, she's struggling with her faith, which is, you know, so she's got things that she's struggling with. And I've told you this, Barry, 1,000 times before. I love it when filmmakers are willing to put up on screen their own struggles with their faith or the things that they struggle with in their life. I always like that because it makes it relatable. I love that. I think it makes films like Barbie stand out more. So good on her. So I will say that I will say now that I didn't hate Barbie. I'm neutral. Okay. And that's good for me. All right. I'm neutral on Barbie. It's good for me.
We'll take it.
All right, Greg, sweet. Thank you, Jaron.
Greg, it sounds like two things. I need to get you a T-shirt that says, I am Knuff.
You know what? I would totally wear that.
I would.
Second of all, I need to send you to your own Casa Mojo Dojo, clearly.
And as long as you give me two pairs of sunglasses, I'm in.
Right. You know, I appreciate your diatribe about it, Greg, because I mean, comedy is, nobody likes this word, but comedy is the great social lubricant. It is. There's nothing we can't talk about through comedy. I love that suddenly a bunch of young women all over the world are now talking about the patriarchy, what that means and what feminism means in all its forms. Prior to Barbie, I would say the best movie I've ever seen that deals with feminism in a way that's deep, but also funny and also clear would be 9 to 5.
Atomic Blonde. I thought you were going to say Atomic Blonde.
Atomic Blonde's a great film too. I mean, you know, comedy is a way to talk about things that are normally controversial. And I don't think anybody wants to see, I don't know that people want to see a confrontational and angry film about feminism, but a sunny comedy that deals with these issues in a way that's provocative, but fun. I think the film, I agree with you. It's firing in all cylinders. And by the way, Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling's performances, I think those are two of the best performances of the year. I do.
Ryan Gosling should be nominated. Absolutely. Is for sure.
Now, Margot Robbie, you don't think?
Yeah, I don't know. Margot Robbie was okay, but I think Ryan Gosling is. I think Ryan Gosling is the heart of that film after watching it. To be fair, that's what I think. But here's the other thing: lest we forget that this film, Barbie, was going to be a star vehicle for Amy Schumer.
Right.
No, I'm glad that was just tossed to the side.
Exactly. It wasn't her complaint was is that she couldn't do it because it wasn't feminist enough. That was what she said. That was her quote. So Amy Schumer was supposed to be Barbie. And I tell you what, I think Margot Robbie killed it. And I think Ryan Gosling killed it even more. I'm calling Ryan Gosling Ken, as you can tell. So that's something big. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, before we get out of here, let's preview the fall. Fall, of course, is what we're looking forward to because it becomes summer movie season. Or excuse me, it becomes Academy Award movie season. Excuse me. We get to experience as critics. This is when the movies vie for our attention as critics, and they're looking for our approval. So are there films this coming fall that we are looking forward to? Barry, I shall start with you.
There's a lot of shuffling going around. They just made the announcement that Dune has been pushed back to spring, which is heartbreaking.
Yes, agreed.
Very sad. But, you know, there's still – I love that there's some really big films coming out. Michael Mann's Ferrari is on top of my list. So is Ridley Scott's Napoleon. But – you know me, I love my horror movies. I'm going to be there opening day for The Nun 2. I'm going to be there opening day for The Exorcist Believer. I love my scary movies. But I love that some of my favorite filmmakers are still out there swinging. Martin Scorsese, we're finally going to see Killers of the Flower Moon. I've been hearing about this film for years. Yes. I love that these older filmmakers are still just going all out. There has been so many conversations about when they get to be older filmmakers, the movies are just not there. I love the final films by Bergman and Kurosawa. And I feel like, I love Family Plot. You and I have talked about that one before, Greg. And I do feel like filmmakers of a certain age who, you know, are still giving it everything they've got with what might be their magnum opus or their swan song. It's always a good time to pay attention to the masters. They always have something to offer and say. And I love that these filmmakers are still going all out with these visions that look that they could rival anything they made as young men. So I'm excited about Scorsese's film, Ridley Scott's film, and Michael Mann's new film, Ferrari.
It is interesting that Michael Mann would tackle Ferrari. I never thought that would be a – no pun intended. I didn't think that'd be a vehicle for his kind of filmmaking, but I mean, you know, that I'm very surprised. I hope it's good. Terry, what about you? Anything you're looking forward to this fall?
You know, I haven't really paid any attention to what is coming up except for the Scorsese movie. I didn't even know about the other two you talked about. People are always saying, what's coming up? Well, I'll tell you when it's almost here. You know, I mean, I always looked forward to seeing the grand prize winner from the Cannes Film Festival. What is
sure,
it?
Sure. Yeah,
that, and you know, whatever wins at Sundance, I'm always interested to see that. But right now, I don't even know what they are. You know, I just I take it as it comes, and I believe it when it gets here. There's so much that we have to wait for, you know. So
sure, absolutely. Well, let me tell you something, Jaron. Have you had a chance to study what's coming out this fall? And is there anything you're looking forward to?
Yeah, just like Barry, I'm going to be there day one for the horror movies, especially for Saw X, because I'm a big Saw fan. And then there's Five Nights at Freddy's. You know, a lot of people, there are like the fan base, and then there's like the people who haven't played the video games. And so there's like that huge controversy of, is it going to be bad or is it going to be really good? But, you know, I'm still going to check it out nonetheless. What I'm really, really looking forward to, other than Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, is Gareth Edwards, The Creator.
I am too. Yeah, I am too.
That looks like a big screen type sci-fi action film.
Gareth Edwards, The Creator, comes out September 29th. It stars Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington. That movie looks fascinating. I was going to say fantastic, but it looks very fascinating.
It's definitely a movie to see on the big screen, so I am all for it.
Yeah, I agree.
Keeping in the sci-fi realm as well, this one is going straight to Netflix, but Chapter One of Rebel Moon, which is Snyder's own version of Star Wars, but that didn't make it to Star Wars, but it's his own story. Yeah,
yeah, I'm very much with you on that. There's going to be two parts to it. It's going to come out in December and then one come out in April. This was the script that he had sent to, or that he did a treatment for Disney to do a Star Wars movie in this vein with, you know, a very dark, gritty tone, you know, a little more violence. And they told him, get to step in, kid. And they told him no. So he did it himself, and Netflix gave him the money to do so. They are banking on this being a franchise, because now apparently they're going to make a game. And not only a game, I'm assuming they're probably going to try and, I don't know if they're going to make toys or not, but they are definitely making a game. They're going to try and franchise this thing. So, and it looks like he's going to probably make two more of these Rebel Moon films. So it's going to be like this trilogy of film, I guess.
Yeah.
So Zack Snyder, listen, apparently there is life after Justice League for Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
So thank God for that. I tell you what I'm looking forward to. Like Jaron, I am looking forward to the sci-fi epic, The Creator. I think that is going to be quite interesting. I'm also looking forward to, if you can believe it, I'm looking forward to A Haunting in Venice, Kenneth Branagh's latest Hercule Poirot mystery is coming out this fall. I'm also looking forward to Craig Gillespie's film, Dumb Money, the one about the GameStop stocks, the one with Paul Dano. So that's supposed to come out. It's supposed to be like Moneyball. It's got like a Big Short vibe to it. It's about the GameStop stocks in 2020. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that was big. There's two great documentaries, one on Hulu and one on Netflix. If you guys know nothing about it, go watch both of those documentaries. They are incredibly entertaining and tremendous. I am very much looking forward to Dumb Money. I think that may be a sleeper hit. I am also looking forward to Napoleon by Ridley Scott. Joaquin Phoenix could not be more perfect to play Napoleon, to be fair. I don't know how he did it, but he picked Joaquin Phoenix to do it. That's going to be in theaters and also Apple TV Plus. The Killers of the Flower Moon. That is also going to be in theaters and on Apple TV Plus as well. That's another film, Martin Scorsese. Looking forward to anything by Martin Scorsese. So very much looking forward to that. It is Killers of the Flower Moon, right? But do I have that right? I don't know if you guys knew this or not. I don't know if I'm looking forward to it, but I do find it interesting, a curio, as it were. Sofia Coppola's got a film about Priscilla Presley.
Right.
Yes.
She's got, and it's called Priscilla. And I'm very interested in Sofia Coppola's vision about Priscilla Presley. It would be a great, it would be a I guess you could say a great side side content for Elvis, which I absolutely love. I think that Elvis with Austin Butler was fantastic. It's a great part of the compendium of Elvis's life, so I hope it's good. So, yeah, so good for her. Sofia Coppola hasn't made a film in a bit, so it's nice that she has. That's coming out in October, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that the other film that I am also looking forward to, unfortunately, like you said, Dune got delayed, yep. Right? So that's coming out in April. That was supposed to come out in November. I'm really bummed. I really wanted to see that. I am quite interested in Exorcist Believer. I don't know if you guys saw the trailer for Exorcist Believer.
Mm-hmm. The 3-minute trailer, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I should feel about that, because I thought Exorcist 3 was a great kind of end to that. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with it. They're bringing back Alan Burstyn, for crying out loud. So that's incredible. And then, I think the last film that I believe that I really am looking forward to, and it's only because it is so incredibly strange. Did anybody see the trailer for Poor Things with Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Is Does it coming that, out this year, or is it going to get like one of those, we're going for the Oscars, so it's January?
Apparently it's coming out in December. Okay. That's what it says now. So Poor Things, this filmmaker is incredibly controversial. This is the guy that did The Lobster.
Yeah.
The Lobster, the Killing of a Sacred Deer. He did which one?
The Favorite with
The Favorite. Yes, with Emma Stone. Yes. So so this stars Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo, and Emma Stone. It looks very, very cool. I'm very much looking forward to it. Like you said, I'm also looking forward to Ferrari as well. And I don't know if I'm looking forward to it, but I am curious about it. Wonka. With Timothy Chalamet. I was going to say
Chalamet, yes.
Chalamet.
I think they should have casted Jeremy Allen White from The Bear. I think he looks closer to Gene Wilder than Chalamet, but that's just my opinion.
Okay, so listen, I know that we're movie critics, but I'm going to say something to you right now. Thank you for bringing that up, Jaron. If no one, if somebody has Hulu and is listening to this, if you have never seen The Bear, do yourself a favor. It is one of the best television shows on TV. The Bear is tremendous. It is it is fantastic. It is filled with human drama. It's suspenseful. I was watching some of the episodes. I was watching through my fingers, and I'm not kidding about that. I literally was. As Jaron can attest, The Bear is one of the best television shows on TV as we speak. It is prime time TV at its finest. That this is it is better. It is Breaking Bad is kind of like where I love Breaking Bad. The Bear is, I think, exceeds it, and it's only had 2 seasons. That's how good it is. So I highly recommend it. Jeremy Allen White is tremendous. Jeremy Allen White, by the way, before I forget, as a huge wrestling fan, my American Nightmare shirt for Cody Rhodes, the Von Erichs is coming out as well with Jeremy Allen White. It's about the Von Erichs, the wrestling family, and about the sons that basically committed suicide. All of it's an incredible story. But yeah, that's supposed to come out this fall as well. So I'm very much looking forward to the Von Erichs as well. That's a side one because I'm a huge wrestling fan. So yeah. Anyway, that doesn't make me as snooty a critic, because you know, watch wrestling now. So it makes me one of the people. So that's good. Anyway, gentlemen, I haven't done this in such a long time. It's been an absolute pleasure. Terry, I hope that your image is still intact after this goes live. But to be fair, your review of Strays is definitely going to get you in trouble.
Yeah.
I I'd recommend. I want to see
Hey, listen. I mean, I mean, there's some. Listen, very
I had no intention of ever doing that on television, I'll tell you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, gentlemen, I'm really disappointed that Aaron couldn't join in on the festivities of today. He certainly missed out. But you guys are tremendous for showing up and doing this. We will do this again, Barry, I think at the end of the fall season. And yeah. Kind of wrap up the fall season where we're at. That's what we do for Hawaii Film Critics Society. There were constant updates as far as reviews from both Terry Hunter and Jaron and Barry and Aaron and, of course, Rick Chattanever. And who else am I missing on our list?
We also Jason got David. Emerson Gu, who is on Oahu. You also have Gary Kogel, who wrote for West Hawaii Now. Let's see, Myung Choi, Jason David. I think it's everybody. Yep. I think we got everybody there. Yeah. And also really quickly, while we're plugging, I'd like to say, you know, not to end this on a heavy note, but if anyone is watching this, wanting to make any kind of donation right now, as you know, Maui's going through a hard time. I want to give a plug for MauiFoodBank.org. That's it's a wonderful organization. They're doing great work.
I agree. Maui Food Bank is a tremendous organization. Your donations do go a long way with the Maui Food Bank. And I will say this as well, once again, not to relate this to wrestling, which I love. I have to big compliment to another wrestling organization called AEW, All Elite Wrestling. The proceeds for their last three live television events all went to the Maui Food Bank to help the Maui wildfire victims. Which is amazing. So good on them. And so, you know, it's always in tragedy. It's always, you know, for as much as we reflect, we always want to try and stay positive and entertain as much as we can as well to keep spirits up. So we thank you guys for joining us this evening. Jaron, before we go, where can we find you on YouTube? You just look up Jaron's movie reviews, right?
Look up Jaron's movie reviews. And then just like how Terry was talking about his, just type in the movie that you might want to see or have heard that I've reviewed. So, and that is as much as I could.
Fantastic. And of course, Terry, I'm sure that you just look up Terry Hunter Hawaii News Now and it's all there. is that good? Is that about right?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a little hard to find on the site. That's why I always tell people Terry's Take.
Oh, Terry's Take.
Now. Yeah. Got Terry's it. Take is the thing that'll get you there. Yeah. If you don't Fantastic. Do that, wandering in that website is so complex and it's, you know, it's never ending. So yeah.
Fantastic. So Terry's Take, check that out. You can Google that as well. And of course, Professor Barry, where can we find you?
The Hollywood and Toto sites, they tend to publish not only new reviews but also old reviews. I've got a retrospective article on Bill Condon's Gods and Monsters that I'm really proud of that's coming out soon. And MauiTimes.com, MauiTimes.org, I think. That's also where you can read my stuff online or the latest issue of Maui Times.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, by all means, let's do this again because this was an absolute pleasure. I had an absolutely fun time doing this with you guys, and I certainly can't wait to do this again. Hawaii Film Critics Society or HiFilmCriticsSociety.org is where all of the reviews are compiled for all of our reviewers at Hawaii Film Critics at HiFilmCritics.org. I constantly keep forgetting to say that. And Barry, are we always we're always on the lookout for new talent, as it were, for movie reviews?
Always. Yes. We may wear our I Am Kenuff shirts, but I would love for there to be some female critics in the Hawaii Film Critics Society. That's one milestone I'm still waiting for.
All right.
Well, okay. Well, that's fair. But I mean,
you want to go back to your cast, Casa Mojo Dojo.
Fair enough. Fair. Listen, we didn't see any of the girls in Barbie, right? Did we? I don't know. So maybe
what?
We saw them drink and take showers, but nobody wrote anything. I don't know. Are the books real?
Yeah, you know, you and I mean, let's just go see Expendables 4 opening weekend.
Yes! Yeah!
It'll bring some balance to your life. You know, yes. I know parking was a lot. It's okay. All right. This was the intervention. It's okay.
All right. So I get some of my masculinity back after watching Expendables 4.
It'll be okay.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, for the Hawaii Film Critics Society, for Barry, for Jaron, and of course for Mr. Terry Hunter. Boy, oh boy, I'm so glad that he lended credibility to our names tonight. I'm so glad that he could come. Highly respected film critic. And I'm glad that we were in his company. Aaron and everybody else, you certainly missed out, but we'll see you next time for the fall wrap-up, courtesy of the Hawaii Film Critics Society. So aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time.
It's been fun.